Do you remember your most recent level up moment in Magic? You know what I'm talking about. Some weird scenario you've never seen before comes up and you burn your brain trying to puzzle it out. Maybe you head to Discord or Reddit or Twitter to ask someone about it afterwards. Maybe you even ping a judge on IRC. You learn something new and it changes the way you approach the game for the better. A lesson that broadens your horizons and allows you to build decks and play games in brand new ways. Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John, and today we've got some lessons from 2021. There were a number of cards which were printed this year which can teach us some interesting lessons from how they appeared, how they played, and what they could mean for the year to come. So I've selected 5 cards, one from each color, and we'll use this final episode of the year to talk about some things that we can learn from these individual cards. None of these would have been enough to make a full episode itself, so maybe consider these to be 5 mini-episodes of things I've had rattling around inside my brain ever since they were printed. And with that caveat out of the way, our first card is Werewolf Pack Leader, a 3/3 human werewolf costing green-green, which reads Pack Tactics. Whenever Werewolf Pack Leader attacks, if you attack with a total of 6 power or greater this combat, draw a card. And it also has an activated ability of 3 and a green. Until end of turn, Werewolf Pack Leader has a base power and toughness 5/3, gains trample, and isn't a human. This happy little borf came out not in Midnight Hunt, but in Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. And the nearest comparison I'd like to point to is good old Grob. Short for Green Bob, Okheim Adversary is 3 and a green for a 2/3 creature elf warrior with Death Touch, and it reads, "This spell costs 2 less to cast if an opponent controls a green permanent." And whenever Okheim Adversary deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. There are subtle differences. Werewolf Pack Leader is always going to be aggressively costed. Lacking Death Touch means you can't always expect it to get through, but it also doesn't need you to connect to get your value. On the other hand, again, it does require a setup cost of attacking with other creatures. There is something to be said for its activated ability, which does allow you to turn almost any other creature on the battlefield or even token you may have to spare into additional card draw, although at that point it's a bit of a desperation play, paying 4 mana to draw a single card. Okheim Adversary is a good card. It sees play in almost 16,000 decks according to EDHREC.com. The difference between the two is what I'd like to delve into. Okheim Adversary requires no real setup. Occasionally, you wind up in a pod where you're the only green player, sure, and then it's just a very slow Oren Viper, which currently sees play in about 3,186 decks. Let's also not discount the casting cost of green-green. 2 green pips on a 2-drop is actually kind of hard to cast on curve. You can't just land Sol Ring Signet this out very easily. We can probably do an entire episode about just how prohibitive mana costs affect a lot of different cards and their card valuation. Writing that one down for next time. So we should see Werewolf Pack Leader played more preferentially in low-color green decks, particularly if they have mana dorks like Llanowar Elves or Elvish Mystic to allow them to curve Forest Dork into a turn 2 Werewolf Pack Leader. Analyzing this, compared to Okheim Adversary, we're also looking for a deck which runs a more aggressive strategy. Go wide decks where you don't depend on a single 2-drop chipping in for an extra card draw. But I would expect that decks which run Werewolf Pack Leader probably also want to run Okheim Adversary. Now, according to EDHREC.com, this card is primarily seeing play in Werewolf Tribal builds, obviously, but also in Wulfgar of Icewind Dale, a Gruul commander from the Adventures in the Forgotten Realms precons, which doubles up on attack triggers, and he easily triggers Pack Tactics without needing to buff the Werewolf Pack Leader first, as Wulfgar is a 4/4 natively with other built-in ways to buff himself. Red also gives the easiest access to extra combat steps, so that checks out with Werewolf Pack Leader's ability being on attack. I've been reanalyzing this card while working on a deck I already have it in, my Gaul to Brostorm deck, which I've done an episode on before, and I actually think it's a much better fit for a more aggressive, more attacky deck that I'm almost done brewing, coming soon. The lesson in review. Comparing 2 cards is less of an apples-to-apples comparison, as even slight differences between the two can drastically change their utility in a game of Commander. The best home for a card is going to have multiple factors, and prohibitive mana costs can force a card to find its home in more low-color decks. And the lower setup cost for a card, the easier it will be to include. Finally, putting an aggressive creature which needs to attack to trigger its ability into a deck alongside a must-block commander is a good way to keep it alive and draw additional value off of it for multiple turns in a row. The next card I want to talk about, moving on to red, is You Find Some Prisoners, an instant for one and a red which gives you two choices, either break their chains, destroy target artifact, or interrogate them. Exile the top three cards of target opponent's library. Choose one of them. Until the end of your next turn, you may play that card and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast it. This has been an interesting direction which WotC has been pushing into recently, and was most easily observed during the Adventures in the Forgotten Realms set. The use of modal cards to provide a staple effect with an alternate mode in this particular set, always framed as the DM describing something to a party of adventurers. Often the staple effect, such as destroying an artifact in this case, is situational. There won't always be a rock that needs to be smashed. And the alternate mode can be situational as well. There won't always be an opponent whose deck is full of juicy targets. When the time is right, either mode on this card can be brutal. Your opponent just tapped out to cast a big, powerful artifact that you can cleanly answer. Or an opponent just cast a top deck tutor at the end of your turn, which you now get to disrupt and take for yourself. I mean, if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for you, right? Modal spells have been with the game since Alpha, with cards like Disenchant allowing you to destroy an artifact or destroy an enchantment. But they began to be codified as charms, first in the Mirage block, which provided three modes you chose when you cast the spell, any one of them probably being too situational to really merit a slot in your deck, or even the one mana that it cost to cast them. They've been revisited multiple times, exploring multicolor design space in Plane Shift and then again in Alara block, before we got the iconic two-color Guild Charms in our second trip to the Plane of Ravnica. We also got a taste of wedge-colored charms in Khans of Tarkir, and then basically charms in the form of Dragonlord's Commands in Dragons of Tarkir. It was actually in Fate Reforged, the middle set of the Tarkir block, where we got the modern templating of modal cards, with bullet points spelling out each option. And since that change 6 years ago, more than half of all the modal cards in Magic's history have been printed, while older cards which were technically modal have seen their Oracle text slowly revised to match modern templating. The lesson here is that there's a lot of interesting design space for Wizards to explore. Take two cards that limited resources might categorize as sideboard cards and staple them together, and we get potentially powerful new cards. I'm sure we'll see some new take on the charms in Streets of New Capenna, which is hinted at being a multicolored Matters set. But it's the single-color modal cards that represent some of the most powerful new directions which we've seen mature over the past 2 years. I could have used this space to talk about Cathartic Pyre, for example, an instant for one and a red which lets you either deal 3 damage to a creature or discard 2 cards, then draw 2 cards, which is a card I'm looking to slot into my CDH deck in place of You Find Some Prisoners. When you see these modal cards, when you see Choose One printed on a card, it probably deserves a second or even a third look, particularly if either of those modes does something really useful in your metagame. Moving on to black, the next card we're going to talk about is Douthi Voidwalker, a 3-2 creature Douthi Rogue with Shadow for black-black, which reads, if a card would be put into an opponent's graveyard from anywhere, instead, exile it with a void counter on it, and tap, sacrifice Douthi Voidwalker. Choose an exiled card an opponent owns with a void counter on it. You may play it this turn without paying its mana cost. There were a lot of cards to talk about with Modern Horizons 2's release, but Douthi Voidwalker is one of the most interesting ones to look at. At a glance, it's easy to overlook this card. A smallish creature with what even does Shadow do again, and it hurts graveyard stuff, but it's in black. Doesn't seem too strong if you're just looking over. But at a second look, the card becomes extremely powerful, particularly in a metagame like CDH where there's a lot of high card quality. And this is easy to brand as another case of blatant power creep favoring colors like black over colors like white. We get an undercosted creature, a 3-2 with excellent evasion, since really the only things that can block this are going to need to have Shadow, which basically means that the only thing that's going to block this are other copies of Douthi Voidwalker, judging by how often Shadow shows up on Commander playable cards. And we get to cut off our opponent's access to graveyard strategies in black, cue the cries of, but Rest in Peace is supposed to be a white card. To top it off, we get an activated ability to steal a card we've exiled and cast it without paying its mana cost. Not just an instant or sorcery, not just a creature, any card. We could even play a land if we really need it. Any of our opponent's cards that go into their graveyard, well, they're exiled instead and they're fair game. In CDH in particular, where most of the game is played on the stack, lots of powerful instants and sorceries get played and then exiled to the Voidwalker. Plus, it can come down before Timna, is basically unblockable, and then can net us that card when Timna hits the battlefield for the cost of one life while doing all this other stuff? Well, actually, most of that is true, but not all of it. Douthi Voidwalker is secretly a modal card as well. Don't believe me? Look at that activated ability again. You have to tap Douthi Voidwalker to activate its ability, which means you can't attack with Douthi Voidwalker while also holding up the threat of activation to sacrifice it for one of those juicy cards exiled by the Shadowy Rogue. The other interesting part that it brings up is the surprising layer of counterplay. You don't look at the cards exiled with Douthi Voidwalker's ability. You look at cards exiled with void counters on them, which means that if someone else happens to cast their own Douthi Voidwalker later in the game, you may have done a lot of setup for your opponent and left a whole lot of exiled cards with void counters on them already. This is also, unfortunately, its own downside, as it does tend to lead to more snowbally effects when you're able to use and reuse Douthi Voidwalker multiple times in a game. Friend of the podcast Mercy from the CDH Discord server was able to get multiple activations of Douthi Voidwalker in a game with his Extus deck, where any instant or sorcery he cast with a void counter on it also triggered Magecraft on Extus to raise dead the Voidwalker back to his hand to set it up all over again. The lesson here is that while Douthi Voidwalker is an exceptionally powerful card, and maybe a little too powerful, it is primarily only seeing play in CDH decks. And graveyard-centric decks, which maybe want to shut down other graveyard strategies without hurting their own game plans, like Meron of Clan Nel'Toth or Muldroth of the Gravetide, could both use and abuse the Voidwalker to its fullest. If you're looking to push your graveyard deck to the next level, and don't mind playing a card which can draw a lot of heat, maybe this is one powerful lesson from CDH to bring to your next Commander Knight. Our next card is Resculpt, one in a blue for an instant, which lets you exile a creature or artifact and replace it for its controller with a 4/4 blue and red elemental creature token. I could have probably chosen either this or Ravenform as examples for this lesson, which are both color pie breaks that I don't expect to be repeated for quite a while. You see, WotC has long held that blue doesn't get quote-unquote hard removal, except in the form of counterspells. It could tap things down or return them to their owner's hands or put them on top of a library, but blue isn't supposed to be good at destroying things. Instead, blue has played around in the space of polymorphing creatures, turning them temporarily into fish or frogs until end of turn. We occasionally saw a card which actually destroyed a target and replaced it with a token in the form of Pongify, originally printed in the Color Pie Warping set Planar Chaos, where Color Pie bends and breaks were literally the theme of the set. This was revisited with Rapid Hybridization during our second trip to Ravnica, and then again in Fate Reforged, where we for the first time exiled a creature and gave its controller a face-down card from the top of their library which acted as a 2/2 nameless, typeless, colorless morph. And each of these cards is powerful enough to see play as a staple removal spell for blue and Commander, particularly in low-color blue decks. These did clash directly with WotC's arguments that blue doesn't destroy things. But WotC has said that it was meant to represent changing something into something else. Both Ravenform and Resculpt took this a step farther. They exiled either a creature or an artifact, then compensated its controller with a token, giving blue some powerful exile-based removal, which is as permanent as hard removal gets in Magic, which for some reason can also hit artifacts, a permanent type which blue has never really been able to destroy before. We actually got some clarification on this from Mark Rosewater in his Mechanical Color Pie update for 2021. And I quote, "Blue used to be able to destroy a creature and give its controller a token creature as a means of expressing transmutation. After a lot of feedback from players, we decided that it felt wrong in blue, as blue isn't supposed to be able to destroy creatures. So we now let it change creature stats temporarily, or with an aura that can later be removed. Compensation removal, or I kill your creature and you get something in exchange, is now solely in white." Two takeaway lessons from this one. First, color pie bends and breaks are powerful. When you see something that looks out of place on a card of a particular color, it usually means you should give it another look. And these bends and breaks give potent tools to low-color decks looking for ways to diversify their answers to opponents' game plans. Second, White may be getting some potent removal coming down the pipeline if some of these designs make their way into white. The original Modern Horizon set may have whet our appetite for this with cards like Generous Gift and Winds of Abandon, both of which are exceptional pieces of removal. And speaking of white, our fifth card for the day is going to be Adeline Resplendent Cathar. One white-white for a star 4 legendary creature Human Knight with Vigilance, and Adeline Resplendent Cathar's power is equal to the number of creatures you control. And whenever you attack, for each opponent, create a 1-1 white human creature token that's tapped and attacking that player or a planeswalker they control. A recent episode of the Mind Sculptors with the Mono White guys talked about some of the design tension inherent in white, where the color pushes you to both go wide with a classic white weenie strategy and then capitalize on it with anthems, as well as going tall with big, beefy beaters like classic angel finishers. The tension, they argue, is that often cards which play into the intersection between these two parts of white's identity is that they require a large upfront cost or a large setup cost in order to get going. Adeline is exciting because she provides both fuel for a go-wide strategy, closely resembling the power of Hero of Bladehold and Brimaz, King of Oreskos, by making creatures whenever she attacks. While she doesn't provide an anthem effect in the same way that Hero of Bladehold's Battlecry ability does, she does make tokens at a rate which scales very well in multiplayer. 3 extra creatures per turn, for 3 mana as the only upfront cost, is really good, and can cover most of the token production that an aggressive go-wide tokens deck needs, meaning that you can devote other slots in your deck to anthems to buff your tokens further, knowing that you will always have an army in a can waiting to go if Adeline is in your command zone. Or it leaves space open in your deck to lean into white's other strengths, staxy effects like Rule of Law to slow your opponents down while you beat them down in a classic white weenie onslaught. Adeline is also exciting because, unlike Hero of Bladehold or Brimaz, her power scales, so she also goes tall. With no other setup required, she's a 4-4 with Vigilance the first time she attacks, 1 power for herself, plus 3 power from the tokens she generates. She is always a threat on her own, and can threaten to command or damage people out of the game if they're trying to block tokens for value, instead of respecting the power she represents. 4 toughness in Modern Commander often means she'll trade for at least 2 creatures when she swings, so you won't be blocking her very profitably. Put another way, she is both the engine and the payoff for something that white is already good at doing, putting cheap creatures into play. Her setup cost is 0. She applies pressure, which scales with the number of players in the game, and she both plays into and pays you off for one of the strengths which white brings to the table. I had the pleasure of taking a beating from Josh at Second Seven's build of Adeline a few weeks ago on stream. Be sure to check out his channel for an example of just how brutal Adeline can be at a CDH table. And those are the 5 lessons from 5 cards in 2021. I'm sure I missed some cards which changed the way you thought about the format, and I'd love to hear from you. What cards taught you something this year which you want to share? Are there some hidden gems that people are missing? Or did you learn something about deck building or piloting because the nuances of a particular bit of wording in the text box of a new card opened a new door for you? Leave us a comment on YouTube, where we are Gemstone Mine Podcast. Add us on Twitter, where we are Gemstone Mine MTG, or send us an email, where we are gemstonemindpodcast@gmail.com. Until next year, I'm John, and this is Gemstone Mine.